Bounce me up, Daddy.
Bounce. Banter, canter, big can of Fanta.
Mate!
How has it taken ten seasons to get to that?
But it had to be the Fantasm season.
Yeah. I scream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream men who randomly become action stars and central characters in very strange sci-fi horror franchises. That's the original slogan that they went with. They rounded it down a little bit. Hi, welcome to the Bitter End Podcast with me, Tom Denny.
And me, Todd Jordan. And we are here at the Bitter End
yes.
of the Phantasm season. This is it. Phantasm 5. Ravager!
The Ice Cream Man cometh. Yes.
Man, I really love sinking my teeth into that title. It's not every day you get to use the word Ravager.
That's how it's pronounced.
Coming out.
Yeah. Ooh, doggy. Well, we watched the trailer for Ravager, and it ravaged my little brain. So, like, the Phantasm franchise, as we have, you know, said over the past season, is a bit of an odd'un, and it's just very odd that it's all boiled down to, like, you know, the first film would be like, who is the real star of this franchise? And I would never in a million years have said, oh, it's definitely Reggie the Ice Cream Man. And he's going to basically be like some sort of like fucking post-apocalypse Snake Plissken diving through different galaxies and all this kind of shit by the final film. But that seems like what it's going to be.
This trailer is like when you're in a hotel room and you're trying to find a movie to watch and you're flipping between all the different channels and there's a different movie on every channel. It's like, click, oh, what's this? Oh, it's Independence Day. There's a massive big explosion of a city being nuked from above. Click, oh, it's The Matrix. There's a big white room with lots and lots and lots of the tall man going off into the distance. What's this? Oh, it's Saw. We've got Reggie the Ice Cream Man being strapped down and tortured in some sort of horrible way.
Yeah, it's like changing channels, but for some reason Reggie the Ice Cream Man is in every film that you're watching.
Now, I kind of love that idea.
Oh, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Maybe if they do Phantasm 6. It seems like there's a bit of a talk in this about parallel universes. It opens with this whole thing saying, like, oh, some people, there's a school of thought thing that you can be in two places at the same time.
So yes!
I'm thinking, like, Is it going to be like a parallel Reggie going into the Reggieverse?
I absolutely love that idea. I absolutely love it. Now, can we talk about the CGI?
I suppose we're going to have to.
At some point, because this is a 2016 movie.
Mm.
18 years have passed since the last one. The CGI seems to have taken quite a giant leap backwards.
I mean, it has all the sort of like the big screen power of a 2016 sci-fi channel movie.
Yeah.
And it's everything, you know, like the compositing of it all looks a bit kind of janky, that, you know, there's a person very obviously standing not in front of this bright red sort of post-apocalypse-y kind of landscape where there's giant murder balls the size of, like, the moon lasering down buildings. Like, it's going some places, this film. And it says in the trailer that this is going to be the last film in the franchise. Like, you know, like, this is the official end point. So hopefully we're going to get some, like, good answers and get some nice resolutions to everything. Looking forward to that. But yeah, like, there is some janky-looking CGI.
Listeners, if you can hear some background noise, my cat, the Moose, has climbed aboard the table where she's normally not allowed. For now, I'm going to allow it for a moment longer because I think she's going to get bored and fuck off. There she goes.
There we go.
There was a point where it even seemed like they'd CGI'd the tires onto a car. I didn't quite understand why. The only thing I can think is that the car was just stationary on jacks and they had CGI'd these tires so they could make
they
it look like
made,
it was
made
moving.
A spin on it. Like,
yeah,
oh,
it was really weird. On the subject of it being the final movie, there is a something hanging over this one for me, at least, which is that we know that Angus Scrimm, who plays the tall man, he's no longer with us. He has passed away.
Mm.
And I cannot remember from having read Don Coscarelli's book, I can't remember whether or not he had passed away between the filming and the release of this. So they might have known when they made the trailer there's not going to be, because you can't make a Phantasm film without the tall man, and you can't recast him, can you?
I mean, I don't think you could, because it's not even like these films are being banged out like really in quick succession to make loads of money. They're obviously, you know, doing it because there's a fan base and the people making them like making them, but I don't think it's all about, you know, making the big green.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like, the gap between this and the last film is a pretty crazy gap.
18 years. 18 years.
Which is even crazier considering, like, the cliffhanger that the last film ended on. It's just like, my God, that would be frustrating if so you'd, Tom, like, watched that at the time.
For our listeners, can you recall the nature of said cliffhanger?
Oh, in it, the tall man gets hold of Michael. He gets, like, the murder ball out of his head with his soul in, or something like that. The tall man gets Michael, and they go into, like, the tuning fork portal world, and then Reggie the ice cream man dresses up full ice cream man, gets his four-barreled shotgun, and goes into the portal. So we're now going into, like, parallel worlds or, like, different dimensions or something like that. So, like, it's going to be batshit crazy. The trailer looks batshit crazy. I'm up for it.
I am totally up for it as well, my good buddy. So before we dive in, you know what we have to do. Mm. We have to keep a little house and we have to play the IMDb guessing game. So, Thomas Elizabeth Denny, let me ask you this. The previous film of the franchise, Phantasm IV Oblivion from 1998, that scored a 5.7.
Mm-hmm.
What is your guess on the IMDb score for Ravager?
Well, this is quite new, and I'm just kind of, I don't know, I've got a feeling that you're being a slightly newer film, maybe it's going to be doing a little bit better, hopefully, maybe it's gone up to a 6.
Well, you're right to go for a number on the nose, but that's not the particular number this time.
No.
It is a 5 on the
nose.
So it's a drop of 0.7. Now,
still pretty good, like, you know, for the final film of the franchise to be hanging in around that point.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
pretty
and
solid.
I think for most horror films, a 5 plays like a 6.5.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's going to be, because the thing is with the trailer is a little bit disjointing from, like, watching the rest of, like, the franchise, because it's, like, fucking, like, laser spaceship balls and, like, crumbling buildings and, like, big CGI crashy smashy effects. It feels like it's going to be a very different kind of Phantasm, and I can't wait.
Ravage me, baby!
Cheers.
Cheers.
Bitter end, baby.
Bitter end. 10th time at the bitter end.
Oh my God.
Guys,
it's going to taste smooth. We've done it. That's all the Phantasm films.
That is all of the Phantasm films. I need to celebrate. There we go.
Cheers, man.
Buddy. Thanks for gripping in tight for that ride with me.
What a ride that was.
That film is unusual. It's
deeply unusual.
It's, oh, that's fizzy. Listen to that. it's a very strange film. It's, again, super ambitious, and it was about halfway through the film when we realised that there's two different timelines.
We knew there were two different timelines, but they're actually two different timelines. Not just like it's a film and we've made up two different timelines.
They're shot like a decade apart, which is why this film took 18 years to make. They did some Richard Linklater shit on this.
There's
a lot.
Yeah, sorry, I'm slightly shell-shocked by it, because it just kind of finished, and I was just like, huh, okay. And then when you thought the film had finished, it did some more weird shit, when you thought it had no more weird shit to give. So strap in, buckle up, we're going to try and run down what goes on in the final chapter of the Phantasm saga.
Yes, because now there is a theory of storytelling, and I want to say it's attributed to Philip Pullman, but I might have it wrong. So really, really sorry if that's the wrong attribution for this. But the idea is that In storytelling, you have trees and you have trail. The trail is what you walk down to get from the beginning to the end, and the trees are what you look at while you're walking down the trail.
Okay.
If your story is all trail and no trees, then it's a very barren trudge. And it sort of becomes hard work. And if you have too many trees and not enough trail, then you get lost amid the trees and you don't end up going anywhere.
And there is no story.
Yes. This film is all trees.
A lot of trees.
But I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily in this case. I didn't hate the film.
But I was kind of a little bit confounded by the film. It felt like, you know, at the end of like a series of films that has been... You know, for every cool thing it gives you a big, weird question. And then if you're watching this, you know, like a fan of Phantasm in real time leaves you hanging for what could be a lot of years to then not have those questions answered. And then it finishes with its most, I don't know, incoherent film.
Yeah, like, incoherent is right, but it's almost, it's a film about incoherence.
Yeah, like a big part of the film is it's all about Reggie and his mental state, and I guess, and kind of like, what has his battles with the tall man done to him? And so there's all these scenes of like, Reggie coming out of the portal after he went into the portal at the end of Phantasm 4, and he's like kind of come back out the portal, he's been fighting in another world or something, and he's getting back to life. And then we also have this timeline where it's Reggie as an old man in a, like a nursing home with dementia talking to Michael,
yeah,
who is back.
Michael's the little boy from the first one, now a fully grown man.
Yeah, who has been like the person that the tall man has been pursuing for a reason, for a really specific reason that I don't think is answered at all.
He just says that he's his subject.
Yeah, and he goes like, I'm done with you now. And it's like, why? Why now at this point when nothing has really seemingly changed? What? So we've got this whole bit of, like, Reggie as an old man, he's told he's got dementia. So it's kind of like they're doing this thing of, like, oh, well, is any of this happening because he's got dementia? You know, has anything that's come before happened? Is any? And then there's another timeline where it goes proper, like, post-Skynet Terminator. We're in the future in a proper, like, post-apocalyptic war zone where... the tall man has like destroyed the world with an army of mega balls.
And these balls are like as big as the moon.
Yeah, and they've got lasers that come out in like a big kind of Independence Day style, and there's like a human rebellion, and Michael has become John Connor. And there's all of this stuff happening, and it cuts between all these different timelines in a way that's meant to disorient you and make you be, you make Reggie be like, well, what's going on? And make you be like, well, what's going on? But it, I kept on feeling that this, at some point, the film was going to lock into something solid that you give you something a little bit more to hold on to take you to like the conclusion and the third act. And it kind of, I don't know, like it kind of does in the way it just gives you more action. But it's flitting between two timelines, like the dementia timeline and the Terminator 2 future timeline, like crazy.
What I like about this retelling, Tom, is that you yourself seem to be flitting between two different timelines of retelling.
Yes.
One where you're sort of attempting to tell people what happens in the film, and the other one where you're reacting to what happens at the end of the film.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, we'll start. Well, let's go back to the beginning. That's a good place to start.
That's a good note for the people that wrote the script for Phantasm 5 yeah. Ravager. Maybe. Why not try starting at the beginning,
yeah,
lads? But let's do that.
There were moments in this film where I felt like, are they just Forrest Gumping it? Because there's a bit where it's kind of like Michael talks to Reggie when he's got dementia in this nursing home. He's like, I'm meant to keep you engaged. Tell me the story again from the beginning. And then it's kind of like, okay, and now we're going to like Forrest Gump this whole thing or something while Reggie sat at the bus stop talking to passers-by.
Yeah, like, well, yeah, exactly. There's a lot of voiceover to begin with, and then they just sort of abandon the voiceover. So we're going to try and make some logical sense out of what is a very ephemeral, intangible, sort of fuzzy, blurry critter of a story. Not much trail, whole lot of trees. So it kicks off and we've got matey boy Reggie, the ice cream man, and he's walking out of the desert and he's looking like a badass and he's wearing his ice cream suit and it's got like some very delicately placed mud like just on one knee.
Yeah, something. A tasteful rip.
And he's carrying his gun and he's like, oh, I've stumbled out of a portal from who knows where. I don't even know if this is my world anymore. Am I on Earth? Am I on his world? I don't know. I don't know what's going on. And he's like clambering through the wreckage and he's like stealing bits of garbage to sleep under and stuff like that. And then a man drives past.
He's in the middle of a desert.
He's in the middle of a desert.
With one straight road running down.
One straight road. And this man who's kind of... He's your quintessential putz. He's just this real sort of schlubby, like, dickhead of a guy.
Yeah.
And he's driving a 71 Barracuda, which also happens to be the car from every other Phantasm film. And Reggie's like, hey, man, you're going to give me a lift? And the putz is obviously really scared of Reggie because I'd be scared of a 70-year-old ice cream man with a gun. And he's like, give me $50 and I'll give you a ride to the next town. And Reggie's like, all right then. He gets in and he's like, I used to have a car just like this. And the putz is like, oh yeah, looking a bit nervous. Reggie goes, yeah, in my car, I had a gun hidden behind the gearbox. And then they both reach for the gearbox at the exact same time. There's nothing in there. And then Reggie goes, oh yeah, that's right, I forgot. It wasn't the gearbox, it was the glove box. And he goes into the glove box and there's a gun in there. And then he's like, bad move, putz. Now get the fuck out of my car. And it was this cool little kind of vignette, but it didn't really amount to much. So he kicks the putz out of the car, takes his car back.
I mean, instantly I have an issue with this. Like, Reggie's just, you know, at the end of, like, the last film, went into this portal. Fuck knows what he's been doing. How long has he been gone? It's like... At what point is this that he's come back? Like, what are the odds that he just runs into some guy who's like, hey, I just stole your car 10 years ago?
Well, that's the thing. Spoiler alert, listeners, it becomes heavily implied that this entire timeline is a delusion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the thread that it hangs from is that if that is a delusion, then it's also entirely likely that the previous four films were a delusion.
Yeah. Yeah, it leaves you coming out being like, well, I just don't know. What did you learn from Phantasm 5? I unlearned things from Phantasm 5.
They very nearly, it was all a dreamed, the franchise.
Yeah, yeah. But very early on in the film, like, almost.
Well, we are getting ahead of ourselves because...
So the putz gets kicked out. Reggie's, like, driving down with his Barracuda. He's like, I'm loving my Barracuda. Yeah, 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 mud balls. Murderball car chase suddenly happens with some janky CGI murder balls flying after. Like, Reggie's just randomly firing a gun behind him, not looking, like, I'm probably going to hit that ball. Handbrake turns, you know, the murder ball speeds past him and then tries to catch up. One of the murder balls gets the putz in the back of the head and then, like, Reggie drives over the dead putz and all this.
His head explodes. And I forgot to mention the putz is in his pants because Reggie made him change into his pants for some reason.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, there's more handbrake turns and skidding and stuff like that. And then, like, Reggie stops and he gets out the car and he gets the gun out and he's walking down the desert road in slow motion, firing at this murder ball that's coming at him. And I write the note in my book, Reggie is the Sarah Connor of ice cream men. It just feels like this kind of, like, Terminator 2 Sarah Connor, like, ultimate badass, except it's this, like, bald guy with a ponytail dressed as an ice cream man. And then he's like, you know, he's like shooting at this murder ball. And then we hard cut at that point to Reggie in a, like, an old Reggie, an older, much visibly older Reggie in a hospital bed. Or, like, in a wheelchair.
He's in a wheelchair. Now, this footage has been shot at least 8 years after this previous footage. So at first me and Tom are like, that old makeup is really convincing. But no, he really is older.
That much older, yeah.
But, like, it was almost that they were youngening him down for the earlier footage because he was still dyeing his hair then, and now he's stopped dyeing his hair.
Yeah.
He looks old. He's quite old. He's quite old here. He's being pushed along. Talk about looking quite old. He's being pushed along by Mike, the guy, A. Michael Baldwin, who played the original little boy, who's now like 45 if he's a day.
Yeah.
He's going bald and he's looking kind of sad and old as well. And he's like, oh yeah, you're in an old folks home, Reggie.
You've got dementia now, mate.
You've got dementia. You keep telling me the same stories over and over again. The doctors say I'm supposed to keep you engaged.
Tell it again.
So then Reggie starts telling the story again about him emerging from the desert, only this time there's no putts.
Yeah, he's driving along in his car and he's like, the story starts like it always starts, with a girl. And then me and Todd are like, oh no, we're not going to have more of Reggie just being like an absolute fucking perv, are
Reggie
we?
The jizz whale in horn doggy.
Yeah, exactly. He finds this girl. Well, she's a woman.
Her name's Dawn.
Broken down at the side of the road, and actually, he's less pervy. He is a bit less pervy. He is still trying to perv, but it's less kind of like, I don't think he actually physically assaults any women in this film, which I guess is an improvement from like the past few.
Also, he's that much older that it seems like she sort of considers him to be this like hilarious befuddled old fool,
yeah,
rather than an actual threat.
Yes. Yeah, so he picks up Dawn, they go back to her farmhouse. There's this weird bit where Reggie is sat in front of a roaring fire pretending, learning how to play the guitar again, because he's playing some random ass shit.
It genuinely sounds like he's never played the guitar in his entire life.
Yeah. And Dawn comes over and it's like, hey, Reggie, I was just thinking, you know that story you told me about your friends like fighting the tall man and all that kind of stuff and like other dimensions and like little sort of like goblin zombies and all that kind of stuff? It's a bit weird, isn't it? Did that really happen? And he was like, yeah. Yeah, pretty much. He's like, yeah, all right, I'm going to bed then. And that is the scene. And he's like, whoa, don't go to bed. I'm still Reggie. I still had to perv on you a little bit. It is required in all of my contracts. Whenever a film I'm in, I have to try and woo somebody. So come in, baby, let's work. And then she's like, no. And he's like, well, I'm going to write a song about you then. And she's like, good luck with that. And she goes to bed in the most unnatural way. She walks into her bedroom, all the lights on, doesn't turn any of the lights off, just lies down on the bed, folds both of her arms across her chest like she's Dracula, goes, ha! Closes her eyes, and that's it.
Instantly asleep.
And then you can just hear Reggie in the living room, like, trying to, like, make up this, like, sort of very sort of like psych folky 70s-y bullshit song, like, oh baby, I'll hold your mind. And it, like, the joke is that he can't remember her name, but obviously he wants to fuck her.
So she goes to sleep, and then so does Reggie. He falls asleep on the sofa, and then he jerks awake, and he's back in the old folks' home. And he's old again, and he rolls over, and there's somebody in the bed next to him.
He's not even in the old folks' home. There's an establishing shot that he is now in an old-timey old folks' home because right. There is a horse and carriage outside
yes,
the old
okay,
folks'
so,
home.
And the nurse is all dressed old-fashioned and...
Yeah, and who is in that bed next to him?
It's Jebediah Morningside, played by Angus Scrimm, who is the tall man, and is Jebediah Morningside, who is the previous version of the tall man from before he turned into the tall man. He's in bed as well, and he's like, hello, would you like to be my friend? Welcome to the place where they take you when you're going to die. Okay, bye.
We're never going to see this timeline again.
No!
Never. We don't go back to oldie times
but
again.
But it's a super creepy little bit.
Yeah.
And then Reggie jerks awake and he's back in Dawn's farmhouse, goes into her bedroom, rut-row, there's a little buzzing in there.
Yeah.
The buzzing behind the bedroom door is not the buzzing behind the bedroom door that Reggie thinks it is.
No.
Because there's a murder ball in there and it's driving
right in her
its
face.
Way through her face and there's blood everywhere.
And then
it's
Reggie...
It's quite nice.
Yeah, it's quite a good bit, classic bit of murder ball and Reggie's like, rut-row, better do a runner. The only other person on the farm is the farmhand who's like Bulgarian or Hungarian.
He's Bulgarian, his name's like Demeter.
Yes.
His name's Demeter, and he's in the barn. Reggie runs into the barn. Demeter's in there. He's got like an axe and some steampunk goggles on. Yeah. And he's like, the fuck?
Yeah, because like Reggie bursts in with all these guns because he's like, I'm being chased by murder balls. And there's this, you know, bit of like, you know, comedy of like language barriers, etc., etc. And the murder balls flying around outside the barn looking for them. And this is a bit where Reggie looks through a crack in the barn wall and sees a horse that suddenly gets murderballed in the face. And it's just bizarre and savage. And it's just like these shots of this horse writhing around with CGI blood spurting all over it. And then like Reggie's like, you're going to need a new horse, mate.
Yeah, I don't know why it's so much worse to see a horse get murderballed than it is a person.
I think this is because, like, you know, it's obviously been done with, like, CGI and effects, but it is a real horse writhing around on the floor looking like it has a drill in its face. And there's just something unsettling about that.
Yeah. Now, like, I know there are those horses that they train to sort of roll around as if they've been shot and stuff. Mm. And this is obviously one of those. I've never seen one of them rolling around for an extended period of time.
While blood covers them.
In a pool of fake horse blood. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something about this that this is, like, the most real death.
It really is. Immediately followed by Demeter, the Bulgarian farmhand, who gets...
he gets it in the neck.
In the Adam's apple.
Yeah.
And it goes on forever.
It really does.
And, like, Reggie's kind of looking at him with the gun as if to be like, I could try and shoot the ball, or I could just try and shoot Demeter, actually, and make this easier.
But I'm not actually going to do either.
He doesn't do either. He just watches
Demeter's looking at him as if to say, what are you doing?
Come on, pal.
Yeah. And then we cut back to old man Reggie and Mike.
Yeah.
And Mike starts talking about, it's like, oh, you know, this crazy story you've been talking about, like, maybe it could be kind of real. You know, he starts talking about, like, religions and scientific theories about parallel dimensions and stuff. And he talks about, like, membrane theory.
What's membrane theory, Tom?
Like, I think it's basically saying, like, there's all these parallel universes, but they're all compacted on top of each other, like, sort of, I don't know, like cells in the body or something like that. And so there's all these points where these different universes meet. And those points are, dot, 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 says Michael. What? Like where things cross over? Like,
I guess that's where the tuning forky things are.
Yes, I guess so. But it's funny that they get so close to being like, well, here's a plausible theory, but maybe...
Well,
moving on.
He also throws out this line that I really enjoyed, where he's like, Reggie's like wrapping up the story, and he's like, "Oh yes, the tall man of which you speak, he does seem like a pretty potent adversary." Now,
natural dialogue.
Yeah, nobody speaks like that. B, he seems like a pretty potent adversary. Did the tall man write that line? He's like, yes, I am.
He sounds like quite a sensual adversary. Yeah. What a ravager.
What a ravaging dude. So right in the middle of while Mike is talking about these ways to move from one universe to another, he disappears. He just suddenly disappears. And Reggie is left all alone in the wheelchair. He's like, well, have I nodded off? Did he walk away? What's going on? And there's this distant sound, which is the official Phantasm tuning fork sound. And it goes something like this. That's actually a pretty good impression.
That's pretty good.
Because there's suddenly one of these tuning fork dimensional portals there in the middle of the putting green.
But then we also cut to Dawn's just been killed and Demeter's just been killed, universe young man Reggie, and he's also wandering through the woods and he finds a tuning fork, and there's this bit where like they're kind of mirroring the same movements in these two timelines of about to touch the tuning forks, but then they don't. But also in young man Reggie universe, we see a giant moon-sized murder ball in the sky.
Murder moon!
For some reason.
It's so sick. Honestly, it was so sick to see the murder moon. It's just huge and it's floating there and it's just a big silver ball, but it's also, it's not completely smooth. Like, they've done a really good job of...
Bit of texture, bit of grain.
Well, it looks like it's like slightly scratched up and stuff. It's cool.
It's cool. And then young man Reggie doesn't touch the tuning fork, but he goes through the portal and ends up in a Matrix-style white room with Angus Grimm, the tall man. This is like a younger version of the old tall man. And in these scenes, his the makeup they've done on him looks quite weird, because it seems like maybe there was a period in Angus Grimm's life where, you know, he's getting on a bit, but he's kind of trying to look a little bit younger than... I don't know. He looks kind of weird in these scenes. And he just has this big, like, chat with between Reggie and the tall man. And it's all like, you know, what are you doing? I'm doing my vague plan. Well, I'm going to stop your vague plan if you could tell me what it is. We all know I'm never going to really tell you what my vague plan is. It's a fool's errand to think that that's ever going to be fully explained. But if you just... fuck off for a bit. I was like, where are we? It's like, not where, when. We're back in the first film. We're back in the 1970s. And all this stuff is about to happen. And if you just fuck off, Reggie the Ice Cream Man, you can have your family back. The family that I killed off screen and we never saw them. And he's like, I don't want those people. They're just going to be fucking like little goblin zombies. I don't want them. What I want, I don't want my wife or my daughter. I just want my mate Michael back and my mate Jody back, who I thought was evil in the last film, but have forgotten about conveniently in this one.
They're just so important to me.
And it's like, I need them. My wife and daughter, they were okay. But, you know, I don't know what to tell you. We never cast those actors, so why bother bringing them back?
Yeah, that's the film. You never saw his wife and daughter. That's the same film where his house blows up twice within the first 15 minutes. Such, two different houses.
It was such a missed opportunity in that, because there's this whole thing, in the second one, his family die, and you're like, yeah, so what? I never saw them. Like, you know, it's like, that sounds like a sad thing, but it would be much more, like, effective if you had just one... scene with the family. So in this, it just seems so weird. Like, it happens later on in the film that the tall man goes like, are you sure you don't want your family back? I can do that for you. I can. He's like, I don't want them. I told you, I want Michael and Jody.
Yeah, I'm not bothered.
Have you met my family? They were dicks. I'd left the gas on hoping that the house would explode.
Which I know, it's such a weird thing.
And then the scene ends and I'm kind of like, yeah, what? This is the point where like I'm like, oh no, this film isn't going to answer anything, is it?
No, I don't think it's in the question answering business, my friend.
No.
It is in the slightly shonky CGI and kind of cool little motif-y thing business.
Yes.
Because
it's
this
the
point,
up-close magician of films.
Yes.
It's all about misdirection. It's like, look over there. Is this your card?
Absolutely. And at this point, about halfway through, we are very much lost in the trees, struggling to find the trail.
Mm.
And I would like to say, I like the interplay between old Reggie with dementia and younger Reggie, who seems to be sort of actually in the future. And they're kind of like, well, what's real? What's not?
Yeah.
Is he mad? Because Dementia Reggie is adamant to his friends that this is all a dream. This is all like an illusion that the tall man has cast. And none of this matters and none of this is real. And I really am actually younger and I'm walking through the wasteland in the future.
Yes.
And that's what's real. And they're all like, nah, mate, you're old and gone mental.
Yeah.
And that makes for an interesting tension.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of
no,
enjoying it at this point.
It is, you know, like there's some cool bits to it. I just kept on waiting for it to kind of like really knuckle down and give me something that I could hold on to for a bit. We get quite a cool bit after this, after the Matrix room, where young man Reggie is walking through a classic phantasm sort of mausoleum.
Yeah.
Being stalked by stuff. And we get like a zombie flashback girl. Like, I can't for the life of me remember which film she was in. She was like one of Reggie's love interests in maybe one or two, who then got a tall man got to her and she tried to kill him and stuff like that. And she like reappears, the little kind of bit of fan service, like wink to the fans. But I was still kind of like, we've been watching these films over the course of a few months. And I was like, I'm really not sure who this is meant to be. Yeah. I really don't know how I'm meant to be feeling about this. And she tries to kill him and he shoots her. And it's like a very quick bit. Some cool spooky stuff going on here. And then, I'm getting lost.
You're drawing a blank. Okay, well, so then he shoots the lady in the head. There's a little goblin that's kind of stalking him through the mausoleum.
Oh, and then he goes into a cave. The mausoleum turns into a cave.
Cave appears. And this is sort of, it lends credence to the fact that, like, okay, well, this is all just an illusion being created by the tall man.
Yeah.
So he goes through the cave, and then the goblin that's stalking him pops out, and its face is a bit crap.
Yeah.
And luckily, you don't see it very long because fucking Reggie oozes it in the face. Yeah. Oozy, oozy, bam, brrr, bam, 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 because that's this kind of film now,
yeah,
apparently.
Yeah.
Blam, blam, blam. And then
the cave dissolves
into like a big floating rock, which is exactly like what his name's Thanos, right?
Yeah, it's like kind of like Thanos's home planet in Avengers Infinity War.
Right.
It's like that, except the tall man is there and he's been like, I'm here about the deal that we discussed in the Matrix room. So do you want your family or not? It's like, I told you no. Moving on.
Moving on. Yes.
And then, like, smash cut. Like now Reggie's on an operating table.
Yeah, and this is where it all starts to look a bit more Saw, like a James Wan film. And he's like, he's on an operating table and he's strapped down. There's a dead dude next to him with a fucking murder ball embedded into his skull. It's pretty sick.
His head is between these two kind of like little mini kind of tuning fork
columns. And this is implied that, well, the whole reason that the previous bits are all bonkers was because it was all being beamed into his brain through these forks.
Which the tall man is using to, like, I don't know, extract information from people or something like that.
Yeah.
And so people come in and rescue him.
Yes, so we meet Chunk, who is a sort of a steampunky goblin, kind of scarfy, kind of little person guy.
Yeah.
And he's joined by his mate, Dawn.
Dawn from the previous thing, except her name isn't Dawn. She's somebody else. She has a different name. She doesn't remember any of the stuff that Reggie is saying, like, I've met you, you got killed, blah, blah, blah. You must remember, I wrote this song for you. It's like, hey, baby, baby, I'm going to fuck you with my big bald head. And no, and she's like, I don't remember any of this. And if I did, I would probably murder you. And like, yeah, okay, cool. So what's that about? Don't know. We're not going to answer that. That's just, but she's there. She was cheap. We've got her to play two roles.
2 roles 10 years apart. Yeah.
And so, like, then they've, like, right, we've come to rescue you. We're, like, you know, like, we're kind of, like, they seem very Terminator future part, like, resistance fighters. And they, they rescue Reggie. And then they meet up with the rest of the gang. And the gang is being led by Mike, who is now John Connor.
He is. Yeah, and they've all got these scarves and goggles and guns. And they're all, like, yeah, man, you've been in this bed for a decade. You've been strapped down for a decade, living in a dream world.
Yeah, and it's like, I never gave up on you, Reggie. I never gave up on you. Now we're back together with big hugging and all this kind of stuff.
They bro down, and then Mike's like, yeah, great, let's...
There's this awesome bit that they're trying to escape this big building that they're in, and they get to the door, and like Reggie's like, Mike, this is brilliant. It's so great to be back home. And then Mike's like, well, I got news for you, buddy. It's not really our home anymore. And they kick open the doors and suddenly the whole world has turned into a level from Doom. Like, everything is like bright red CGI with like digital flames stuck over it. And there's some like live action footage of people shooting zombies and giant like murderable moons in the sky, like Independence Day exploding buildings and all this kind of stuff. And it goes,
it's down this. So great. The single tracking shot down the street. There's like, so much going on. I loved it.
Yeah, there's so much going on. It's so kind of janky, but like really fun and like just weird. And it kind of goes zooms to the end of the street. And then we go zoom into a building. And who's in this window? It's old man Mike. And we transition back to him as an old man in the mental hospital. Whoa.
And so in the old folks home, suddenly it's all back more like the 1920s again. And there's this nurse there, but then when he turns around, it instantly cuts to, no, he's in the post-apocalyptic future again, and it's a graver with a gas mask. And so he fights the graver with a gas mask, but then it also cuts back and he's fighting the 1920s nurse. And it's like, is he just going completely mental on this nurse? What's going on?
It's yo-yos back and forth between the two timelines, like crazy at this point. And there's a bit where Mike, in the younger version, like comes back and is like, hey man, I know I thought you were completely crazy with like, you know, telling me that story, but then I had a dream and it was basically like all the stuff that you said. And then that him saying that transitions into Mike in the future explaining to Reggie what has happened in this post-apocalypse future. And it's that like the tall man has risen up finally with his army of murderballs for reasons that he may have. Who knows? Let's not ask him. We don't want to push him too hard on that point. And is infected the world with a virus that makes people's heads explode.
Yes, now I love a bit of head explodey. And this bit's super weird because the filmmakers have taken real footage of riots around the world, actual footage of riots.
And war zones, like stuff like, you know, like combat helicopters flying into like, you know, like Vietnam or like Iraq or something. But they've CGI'd in a giant murder ball to be the thing that they're shooting at.
Yeah, and this is kind of cool. Like, helicopters shooting at a giant murder ball, like, floating in the sky. Cool. There's fighter helicopters, real footage of fighter helicopters dropping bombs on the tall man as he's, like, walking across the desert or something. That's cool. But then there's real footage from actual riots where there's, like, people being carried off, like by four policemen, like what, like leg, arm, kind of
by force. Yeah,
by force. Very brutal, horrible thing to be happening in real life. And then they've just badly CGI'd, oh, their head's pulsating and it's going to explode.
Yeah, well, the head does explode. And then the guy is still writhing around like he's being dragged into a riot van. Because that's exactly what happened. But now his head looks like it's blown up because they've like digitally fucked with it.
Yeah.
Really weird bit of the film.
Yeah, slightly an odd kind of, from an ethical point of view, because I saw that and I was like, huh, I wonder if the person in that riot footage knows that they're in Phantasm 5. But then I was like, well, if they got boshed into that van by those angry-looking police, it's entirely possible that they are no longer with us because the world is a terrible place.
Yeah. Weird, like, you know, so that's the future that they're living in. And then Reggie and Mike, they're still trying to escape, they're still trying to do some stuff. We get introduced to a new murder ball at this late stage in the game, which is red with spikes all over it that flies into a dude's face and then blows up.
More head explodey!
It's pretty cool. And then, we're kind of heading now towards this bit where, like, the tall man shows up with, like, all of his cronies in whatever this desolate building is.
He's got some gravers, he's got some goblins, they're all there. He's got some bulls.
And then some stuff happens. We probably flash to the past, back to the future, some stuff. We go through a portal. Oh, yeah, like, Mike and Reggie put on gas masks and go through to Arrakis from June. We go back to the tall man's planet that we first saw
in the first film.
And we have this very weird confrontation where you've got Reggie and Mike with gas masks on for some reason, stood at on the other end of a massive ravine from the tall man, who has Dawn held captive, or like Dawn, whatever the future Dawn's name is, held captive. And the tall man is talking to them with his mind. So it's just Angus Scrimm standing there, not saying dialogue, just waggling his eyebrows a bit. And this is the bit where he kind of goes like, I'm done with you now, boy. You were a thing. Okay, fine. And then like Reggie's like, and what about me? He's like, you were just some chump I was fucking with. Basically. all being said without moving his mouth. And then you've got Michael and Reggie shouting things at him, but they've got gas masks on. So they're just waggling their hands around. And I just thought, like, did they film this without knowing what any of the dialogue was going to be? And you're like, we want to have this big digital weird showdown, but we don't know what it's actually going to be. So can we come up with a reason that we can just, like, ADR everything? So it's like, so the tall man's talking with his mind and they've got gas masks on. Maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe. And there's this bit where, like, they've got guns and the tall man says, like, if you shoot me, give a shit. I've got literally hundreds and thousands of spare bodies. I will just come back. And you see the, like, that Matrix shot of lots of guns flying through a white room, but it's all tall man's. And then Chunk, the resistance fighter, shows up and he's turned himself into a human bomb. And he's like, doesn't matter if I kill him, I better blow him up then.
He's hidden.
Goes and fucking, like, turns himself into a human bomb and kills it, tries to kill himself.
Well, crucially, Chunk is a bit of a hero because he's hidden among, as I said, the tall man's got, you know, he's got the Gravers, he's got the Bulls, he's got the Goblins, you know,
yeah,
the lads.
Yeah.
And Chunk is hidden among the lads.
In a cape.
In one of the little hooded capes. And at this point, he throws his hood back and was like, ha-ha, it was me all along.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand that if I kill you, you'll just come back again. But exactly as you said, Tom, he don't give a shit.
I'm just going to do it anyway.
Don't faze him. Kaboom. Chunk goes explodey, taking the tall man out with him. And then...
And that was a scene.
That was a
scene that happened in the film. What did it accomplish? I don't know. Answers on the back of the postcard to the usual address, please, people.
Well, it was something at the climax because after that, we've got old Reggie outside the old folks' home and he's broken out and there are nurses and doctors trying to get him back in. And they're like, come back in here, you crazy old coot. There's no ice cream out here. And he, as they're trying to get him back in, he has a vision of a portal in midair to this other dimension. And his best friend, Mike, appears there. And Mike is like, you were right about everything, about the apocalypse. Here, have this fucking quadruple stapled together shotgun. And an old man, Reggie, takes the shotgun and goes like, brilliant. And he shoots the nurses and they turn into goblins. And he shoots the doctor and he turns into a graver. And they just keep coming. And then everything's on fire and he like slips blissfully into this delusion because...
Oh, like a car pulls up
A barracuda!
A barracuda, like, that's, like, mad maxed up. It's got, like, fucking, like, Gatling guns on it and spikes and shit. And it's being driven by Jody. Remember, his best friend, who they all thought was a baddie in the last film, but don't remember that. And he picks him up, and then the wizard's like, right, let's fucking drive off. The lads are all back together again. We're in a Mad Max car in the future. Let's go, let's go, let's go. Hard cut. It's old man Reggie now... in a hospital bed, and he's about to die.
There's a heart monitor that's going beep, beep.
Michael
beep,
and Jody are both there, despite the fact that, like, I don't know what timeline we're meant to be in. Jody is dead, right? Like, he was dead, but then he was a ghost ball. I don't know. He dies.
Yeah.
Reggie dies, and then we cut to future Mad Max Reggie, lying in the back of a car, and he's just kind of like, looks a bit like, I'm just fucking knackered, mate. And he kind of lies back, looking like he's dead.
But he's happy, and he's listening to Mike talk about, like, we're gonna drive north where it's cold, because the tall man doesn't like the cold. Remember how we established that in, like, a single scene?
Yeah. Credits.
Credits.
And it's like, huh. Really?
Now, I quite liked this ending. I don't necessarily say... I'm not saying I want it to be the ending for the franchise, but, like, I did quite like it. So, for me, what it's saying is... I like the idea that for Reggie, he's got a choice between two possible realities.
Mm.
One where the world is destroyed, but he's with his mates, he's got something to struggle for.
Yes.
And the other where the world is actually fine, but he's just an old man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he chooses the post-apocalyptic world over that. It really reminded me of, spoiler alert for Terry Gilliam's Brazil, but it did somewhat remind me of the ending of Brazil.
Okay.
Have you seen Brazil, Tom?
I haven't seen Brazil.
Oh, mate, I've spoiled it for you.
Yeah, it's all right.
Well, there's a similar-ish ending to that. It's a good film. You should watch it. Well, Michael Palin.
Yeah. Pole to pole.
So, yeah, that's...
Credits,
boom! And they're really, like, bombastic. And then there's a post-credit scene.
And he was like, but this is meant to be the last film of the franchise. What's going on? And we get Chunk appearing out of a portal into the middle of a desert. He is like, reports of my explosion were greatly exaggerated. I just have lost a hand and I'm a bit burnt, but I'm remarkably doing fine.
He's very chipper about it.
All things considered. And then somebody is there to greet him. And
who is it, Tom?
It is Rocky from Phantasm 3. The best thing, arguably, in the franchise.
She had the nunchucks, right?
She had the nunchucks and that, like, Grace Jones, like, flat top. In this, like, she's kind of, like, she's got the steampunk goggles on and some dreads and she's just a badass still. And it's like she's a resistance fighter in the future. She's come to pick up Chunk. He tries to fuck her instantly.
And she's kind of open to it.
She's kind of like, yeah, I mean, generally no, but there's no one else around.
She's more open to it than she was with Reggie.
I know. And then a car pulls up and it's the Barracuda with Jodie, Michael and Reggie, who isn't dead in the backseat. And they all hop in and they drive down a road towards like this desolated landscape with huge moon-sized murder balls lasering the fuck out of everything. And it's like, well, here we go again, folks. But no, it's the last film, but let's keep going. More credits. And then the credits roll over a Phantasm series-themed rap. It's like the fucking Addams Family all over again.
Yes.
Amazing. I've been left your world. Come into my dimension. Cause I know y'all been fishing. But my past and my present. Think on no. Reggie love the ladies where they go. It's like 1 minute they hear and then they turn to animals. If I slept with all these dummies, that would make me handle both. Way they looking in this room. I done been in here before. Running from a tall man, mad scientist. Try to add me to his client list. But if I walk through those gates, it'll be me. I'm not trying it. Telling my best friend that I'm still me, but he don't agree because he ain't me. But we both agree that I'm getting old, trying to kill these dwarves, but they kill me.
And then that really is the end, the bitter end of the franchise. Tom, give me a high five.
Not enough films that we have watched finish with a rap about the film that you have just watched.
Yeah.
You need that in everything. Imagine that at the end of Lord of the Rings.
So it's a heady brew, what we're saying.
It's potent.
I don't think it's my favourite one of the franchise, obviously, but there's a lot that I respect about it.
Yeah, it's just kind of, it doesn't feel like, it's got this kind of like, you know, big scale spectacle, crash bang wallop, you know, like we're doing a lot of stuff, a lot of big epic in inverted commas style stuff to make it feel like this is the end of the franchise. But it feels like somewhere along the way, it's kind of like shifted over a lane to not really being what the franchise was about at the beginning. Like it's become Reggie's story and is like an examination of Reggie's psyche. Whereas at the beginning, and it isn't really very much about the tall man. It's all about his mental state. So it's not about what the tall man's planning. It's not about, like, you know, he was like a B character in the in the first film. It's really weird, like the journey that this film franchise has taken and how he has become the leading character in it when he wasn't.
It's interesting because as far as I'm aware, I may have some of these facts wrong, but I believe that the apocalypse timeline stuff was pretty much shot with the intention of being used for a web series that was going to be a spin-off that was all about Reggie. It was meant to be like the Reggie spin-off that was going to be these little webisodes.
Well, not the apocalypse bit, the kind of like what he did when he came out, or is it what he did?
Oh, yeah, those
he's
ones.
Old in those. It's the young man Reggie
stuff. Young man Reggie, yes. And then all of the older Reggie stuff about the old folks home and the apocalypse. Yes, that's all shot later to try and stitch that all together into a feature-length piece.
Which is crazy. That is a crazy way to make a movie.
Well, that's the way that they do, though, right? That's true indie.
Yeah, and it's got a certain charm to it. And like, the fact that like it does, these characters obviously are that much older, does have... like, there is a quality to that.
Yeah.
Like, in the film, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, this is cool. You know, like, it kind of... makes this weirdness more engaging.
Yeah. So I respect like the far-reaching ambition of it.
Yeah, and to be like, we've got this shit filmed. Like, is there anything we can do with it? Can we like put some other stuff in it? And the way they're like, oh yeah, we can do something with this.
Yeah, we'll figure something
out. It's going to be a lot of fucking weird flash cuts, let me tell you that. But we're going to make it work.
Yeah. So I absolutely. So I respect that, what I can only describe as moxie, quite considerably.
Oh, yes.
And there are some good murderable bits in it. I love the murder moons.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know.
There's still, like imagery and ideas in there that that I would like to see more of. Like, every film kind of presents you with a new phantasm-y world thing. You're like, oh, that's cool. You know, let's dig into that. So, that was good. Not a lot of the tall man.
Yeah, not a lot of the tall man. My understanding is that he was
pretty old,
of a very advanced age by that point. And although I looked it up, he did get to see the final film before he passed away. He was no spring chicken by that point.
Yeah.
So I think there were limits on what he was able to do. So I'm just pleased that he was in it.
Yeah. Good stuff. You couldn't do it without him.
No,
so that's it, man. That's like all the phantasms have been watched by us two guys.
Hell yeah. And I'm super pumped about that. So what's going to happen is we're going to come back next episode for our traditional franchise wrap-up.
We're going to take stock. We're going to figure out really what was going on with this crazy kettle of fish we call Phantasm. And we're going to lay it all out there for you. We're going to try and dig into some other bits of Phantasm lore, Phantasm adjacent material, and just flesh out the whole Phantasm world.
Take a look at that Phantasmobilia. Yeah.
That's the guy. Well, stay tuned for that.
Yeah, and until then, thank you very much for joining us. You can drop us a line on Twitter at BitterEndPod or on Facebook at BitterEndPod. My name is Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny. Fucking hell, man, that was a film. Hey, baby, baby. Hey, baby, baby. Hey, baby, baby. I'm gonna fuck you with my big bald head. Fuck you with my big bald baby. I'm gonna fuck you with my big bald head.